This is the tax update for the week beginning 14th January, and winter has arrived. Looking back, last week saw on the 7th of January Parliament in the UK debating how to tackle avoidance, and I read 81 pages of debate reported and answered and thought the MPs have a lot to say but little to move forward, because the fundamental problem is that there's a lack of a clear definition between the watershed of what is acceptable tax planning and what would be viewed as abusive tax avoidance. But tax avoidance is a worldwide problem, and the European Commission has also published a report along with a second, shorter, 6-page recommendation list, which boils down to, if you untax something, make sure that other states entitled to tax it are taxing it, and have a general anti-abuse rule in place, which we of course will have when this year's finance bill gets royal assent, probably in July 2013. HMRC has published its changed view on transfers of a going concern for property rentals being transferred. And as usual, this podcast is accompanied by detailed notes and appropriate links. And in this case, there is a link to Revenue Briefing 3012, which followed the Robinson family decision. In a VAT matter, the point is that the VAT could have a significant effect on stamp duty land tax, and HMRC have applied the law wrongly in the past. So if a property transfer was accounted for on the basis of charging VAT, it may mean that it's been wrongly dealt with and VAT should not have been charged. So my recommendation is, if you have clients affected by this, get in protective claims for the SDLT and the VAT and read the link. Used to be that you could rely on HMRC respecting your rights and only seeking information which it had the power to request, but doubts began to spread in when, for example, they included a question on income tax returns requiring a disclosure if a personal service company had been used, and I argued that they'd no right for this, and subsequently I've been proven to be correct. Similarly, Schedule 23 of Finance Act 2011 introduced a framework for organisations paying interest, and HMRC then required those organisations to supply HMRC with additional information. But it turns out that the Schedule 23 does not empower financial institutions to collect that information, and so HMRC no longer require this data to be supplied, although there is the possibility that they'll introduce legislation to give the financial institutions the power to obtain it at some point in the future. A lot of members are reporting difficulties with Schedule 56, with employers returning and paying tax late, and the penalties are accumulating. In Mullaney Coaches Limited, the application of the law was illustrated to be quite firm, because it was not a reasonable excuse that an employer was late when the employer relied upon a relative who had been diagnosed and was suffering from cancer to submit PAYE and deal with the administration. The tribunal actually introduced an element of equity and decided that the relative's illness was a reasonable excuse, but I think this was a very favourable decision and an attempt by the tribunal to have a bit of justice in the matter. The final bit today is about the unintended clawback of the child benefit for those earning £50,000 or more. And the warning is that claiming the child benefit, even if you don't actually get any money, might protect a non-working spouse who is caring for children under the age of 12 in relation to a pension entitlement. I've got links to a very good article written by Catherine Arthur, but those thinking of not claiming child benefit should bear in mind that not only will they lose the child benefit of £1,055 for the eldest child and £696 a year for other children, but it could have an adverse effect on a non-working carer's entitlement to the state pension. As always, thanks for listening.